Okay, there we go. Well, I'd like to welcome everyone to the September 28th, 2022 regular meeting of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you would like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and or presentations at the time of your request. We have a preliminary agenda before us. I'd like to call the meeting to order. And if we could all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, and the flag is right behind us.
Okay, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so we have a preliminary agenda before us. I'd entertain a motion regarding said agenda.
So moved to adopt the agenda as written.
Second.
Very good. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so we are flipping over here to page two, item four, public comment. So we do a public comment period at the beginning and the ending of every meeting. And any of you have a comment for the commission or no? Okay, just hanging out. Okay. Moving to item four, we have a consent agenda. These matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. We have two items for consideration. Approve the August 24th, 2022 regular meeting minutes. And item B, approve August 2022 warrants and EFT payments.
I move that we adopt the consent agenda.
Second.
Very good. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Excellent. Okay, we're moving right along to item six, action items. Item A, approve resolution number 2022-09-14-01 regarding purchase and installation of UNL and DSL spill buckets. And Greg, do you want to go over that for us?
Yeah, sure. So staff's requesting approval of this resolution because during a recent inspection by the Department of Ecology of the Port's fuel system, along with our maintenance mandatory grant, they were directed us basically that the installation of fuel spill buckets was needed to prevent future potential fuel spills. It was a directive, not an ask. Tori came up with two possible alternatives, presented to the Department of Ecology. They directed us which solution they wanted us to adopt. And so we went out and got cost estimates, Tori did, and the cost estimates have been estimated to $24,900. You know, staff is requesting approval for this purchase in an not-to-exceed amount of $30,000.
Are these something that we already had in place and they wore out, or is it something new that the Department of Ecology is asking for?
They're in place, but the system has worn out, and then I think when they look at also more recent technology, too, and it's a little different inspector. Well, as a new inspector. I think they just looked at it and said, hey, we want you to replace this part of the system.
Okay.
They've been, you know, we're inspected routinely by the Department of Ecology, right? We always pass muster, but so it's just, they just felt it was time, so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's good.
So I'll make a motion to approve resolution 2022-09-1401, approving the purchase and installation of UNL and DSL spill buckets.
Second.
Very good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excellent. Okay. We're just cruising right along here. On to item seven, discussion items, and we only have one, It's regarding the comprehensive plan rezoning and an update. Great.
So Kitsap County is undergoing the six-year review of their comprehensive plan. The court recognized during the recent review of the use tables that the properties commonly known as the Top and Hill properties, and also a significant portion of the truck and trailer parking, was still zoned as residential. And this has been in play for, you know, really actually a couple decades or more. And so the court submitted a rezone of these parcels to align with the other adjacent property to promote economic development and rezone those parcels from residential to commercial use. This application was submitted before the deadline, which was, I think, September 18th, if I recall. Yeah. So if there's any question about that, I mean, this goes back, if you look back in the files, Tom Wagner had actually had, I think, submitted actually for a rezone when they purchased those properties to go from residential to a commercial use. And it just opens up the potential for different types of uses that we can put on the property, but it is much more limited if it's under residential zoning. We talked to the county during the use table updates, and they said, look, they're not touching, you know, the change of the zoning during the use table update.
Right.
You have to wait for the six-year comp plan, and they said it's right around the corner, which here we are.
Yeah.
So that's why we submitted for that.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any questions with regard to that.
Well, the interesting thing is that with that in mind, in relation to the residential uses versus those commercial changes, we were successful in changing the NC zone that we previously had here on the lower portion of the port property to the urban village center, which is which provides more flexibility in relation to projects and things like that and commercial uses. So,
and it aligns with, so the properties commonly known as the tent pad area here was zoned neighborhood commercial. I think the only other property zoned in the local area here was the Village Green area, was neighborhood commercial.
Yep.
So we had submitted for a change of a change in the use table. So we changed that from neighborhood commercial to urban village center. And everything across the street, pretty much surrounding this whole area, is already zoned urban village center. And I think it was more like just an oversight of not having that change implemented in 2016. But it does open it up for the same types of uses that you have right on the property that we're sitting in right now, actually, for example.
Well, and to that, that's what the request was as well, is to change the parking and Hill and Toth to that UVC zone, just so that's clear.
They just said they won't jump from residential to urban village center zoning.
Yeah.
You have to first go from residential to a commercial. And we're just, but once it's zone commercial, we submit it, you know, to go to it.
Right.
How many years do we have to wait between those two things?
Well, I hope it's not years.
Yeah, I know.
Well, so here's the thing. We submitted a formal rezone request, which I think will probably be handled pretty expeditiously. I don't think it'll be years, I hope.
I believe that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to put words in the county's mouth, but the DCD staff intimated at that time, you just have to wait till we undergo the comprehensive plan and then you can submit it. So they may, it's a good question, we'll have to ask it when we meet with the county, which does lead to the next comment about the comprehensive planning. So the county and the court are scheduling a meeting or meetings to discuss the overall comprehensive planning process during the first half of October. It may end up going into the second half of October, depending on schedules. And during that, we'll ask these questions, you know, the county, what's it look like? Yeah. Though, in all fairness, Commissioner Gelder will be there, probably Eric Baker, and they're not, ultimately, they don't necessarily make that decision. It's the staff level.
Yeah.
No, but it's good to have it in their mind.
They'll run it to ground internally, I suppose.
Right.
And that's coming up here pretty soon. So the county has reached out to us, and we're in discussions with the county ongoing, but they want to know what the port's position is and what we're trying to achieve within the port district with regard to the Kitsap County's comprehensive plan. And so we had, in the last work session, we had a discussion about how, what are the pieces of the comprehensive planning process, and then what questions do we want to ask the county for clarification, and or do we have recommendations with regard to the comprehensive plan or the sub-area plan, the Kingston sub-area plan,
right,
and or buildable lands analysis. And then do we, can we ask for incentives to promote investment and development? What incentives do we want to ask the county to put in place to help people develop? From a commercial, you know, we're more focused on commercial, not residential. So when you see the residential part of it being put forward, but we're not seeing the commercial development over the past years.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So what do we need to do? What does that look like?
And the interesting thing about the UVC zoning is that that through the use table update, you know, there were allowances to allow housing only in that zone, and we really believe that that would be a certainly be an economic hit to the area if the UVC zone allowed only housing and that was all we got, you know, that if there was a way to incentivize a component of commercial development with the understanding that, you know, the particular underlying zone could provide for residential use, but that if people were given, if a developer was given an incentive to also have a commercial component, that made sense that the county would allow that. So we're throwing that out there that we really would like to see that.
Yeah, so these are the primary components of the comprehensive plan. There is the overall comprehensive plan that the county has. There's the Kingston sub-area plan, and there's like 52 different policies that they have for the Kingston sub-area plan. And I know it's on our website, but we can post to our website in case you want to look at it. So then you ask, hey, are we accomplishing these goals or not? And if we're not, are those goals still valid? Do we want to amend them? And what do we need to do to accomplish goals? Or do we want to add goals or subtract goals? What do we want to do now during the six-year process? So you have the comp plan, the sub-area plan. You also have the design standards. I left that out, but we could look at the design standards if that's on the table too. Because sometimes they have really restrictive, potentially sometimes you could have a really restrictive design standard that don't allow you to actually develop. And then you have buildable lands analysis, which Kingston Community Advisory Committee has done a pretty thorough analysis, so we're going to work with KCAC to take a look at what they've recommended and see what we want to do, if that aligns with the board, which most of it I'm sure does. And then you have, last component is the, again, the incentives. What can you do from a county perspective to promote development or discourage certain other types? You know, you can do both. You can carrot or stick. Ideally, you want to incent people and take down barriers from development is what you're usually trying to
accomplish. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So what we were kind of thinking, too, is that it's about what they were talking about, encouraging some commercial. It's fine if they want to put residential on the main street, but have the bottom floor be a commercial or some sort of business that can come in and take that space, so you don't just have commercial lining the street of Kingston. And in the comprehensive plan that the county's put out, the sub-area plan for Kingston, some of the goals and what were they called exactly that they had for
policies.
Kingston? Policies for Kingston was, they're saying that we need to create 25 new jobs a year for Kingston. They want us to have a certain population by a certain time frame. And none of those have happened. I mean with Arborwood and Seaside, they're getting up there, but we're technically not meeting what they are saying. So it might be that that's not exactly right. The port's main mission is economic development. That's what a port's main mission is. And so in order to do that and to follow that, we have to find ways, which is exactly what we're doing now. We're looking at ways to actually do that in Kingston.
I'd like to make a comment about the they want us to take, mm-hmm. have 25 jobs, take a certain amount of population. It made sense at the time when they were allocating population that was determined by the regional Puget Sound Regional Council. They divide up the whole area population into the four counties, and then they pretty much let the county decide where within that county. But those are goals. The fact that they haven't all happened a lot of places because of, you know, COVID, et cetera. But we need to take a really hard look at what's happening with development and how much is just on hold as opposed to never going to happen. But those were the best estimates that the county could make at that time, and I don't like to be an apologist for the county.
Oh, no.
But I just think it's important that we recognize that these were allocations and predictions made on fact and policy, not just, oh, Kingston can do that.
What, mm-hmm. what the information they had at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. Yeah.
That's good.
Still makes me crazy.
Yes.
Well, I think it is, you know, it's a plan, and they're trying to use metrics. And then you also have, like this, like you said, well, then you had construction costs go crazy. You also have COVID, and you have a number of different things, right? That created a whole lot of different uncertainty, which isn't conducive to any development, really.
Yeah.
So you even looked at, you know, the seaside development, you know, and what can happen and befall something, which, you know, with the residential market the way it was, you would have thought that would just, like, rip through, right? But even all these things can run into all sorts of different, you know, issues. That's why.
Yeah.
So it's always easy to look in retrospect and armchair quarterback and be critical. I don't think that's the point. The point is, it's kind of like, hey, what do we want to see going forward?
Yes, that's exactly.
Yeah, not to criticize, look back.
And that's the beauty of the comprehensive plan as well. It's a, you know, every 6 years you're starting with, you know, a new reality.
Yeah.
And so with COVID, that's certainly from the last comp plan update in 2016, lots of things have changed for us.
Well, we have the census now. We do have the census data. So we went from 5,000, just under, barely under 4,998 residents to just under 7,000 residents in the Port District now. So that's another 2,000 residents in the Port District. And now, but now you're going to see with Arborwood, for example, that's in the Port District. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a substantial growth potential for.
If you figure, two point something, you know, people per household, and it's 750 homes.
Yeah.
And Seaside here is 140 units, I think. So,
The other thing to keep in mind about the allocations and population planning is that the real point of that is to make sure that the appropriate and necessary urban level services are in place to support it.
Yeah.
You know, roads, ferries, sewer, water, etc.
Yep.
And, you know, there are some significant parts of Kingston that aren't sewered yet that are in the urban growth area,
mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And there's method in the madness, even mm-hmm. if it isn't quite right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's great. Where are we here? Oh, at the financial report. Thank you. And I think we've got Audra here. Audra, are you going to go over?
Yes, hello, everyone.
You going to go over the financial report for us?
Yes, I do.
Awesome.
So, hello, everyone. I'm going to start off with the balance sheet. Our total cash and equivalents are at $2.61 million, which is an increase of $463,192 year to date. So, that's great. Our LGTO has $129,000. $500 with ending cash, including debt, $1.88 million. I just want to point out that in August, we will insurance to Honduras of $103,000 decreased our cash in equivalent. It's recognized other current asset because it's a prepaid account. So if spent and so of it will be hitting our P&L.
Hey, Audra.
It did hit.
Hey, Audra.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. I think you're it's a little unstable.
She just went.
The your connection.
Oh, our whole connection.
It all went.
The whole thing went. Uh-oh.
It might be that she puts herself, takes her picture off.
Yeah.
It might help.
Yeah, just take your video off. It should be good.
Yeah, turn your video off and then see if it just uses only your audio.
Got that?
It's not.
Greg, you can do it.
Okay.
You want to take over, Greg?
Yeah, sure.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, no worries. No problem.
Because there's people here, like, we have the narrative kind of, but they don't. So I can share it with people in the audience. So I'll start over. So you want to start with a balance sheet. So our balance sheet, total cash and equivalents are at $2.61 million. That's an increase of $463,192 year to date.
There we go.
And you want to send this to you, so you can look it up. The long-term limited tax general obligation bond, the bond basically for the covered mortgage, it has a balance of $729,500. So our ending cash, including debt, so if you subtracted out that debt for the bond, is $1.88 million. Also in August, we paid our annual insurance dues to Honduras, and that totaled $133,312. Turning to the P&L, or profit and loss, the month of August, total income was $482,365. Total expenses are $254,041, resulting net ordinary or operating income of $26,969 and $55,044, excluding depreciation. So our net income is actually negative $40,110 when you include depreciation.
Right.
Year to date, total income is $2.27 million. Total expenses are $1.8 million. And that results in the net income of about $232,352, excluding depreciation. There's a net loss when you include depreciation. Depreciation is running us, I think it's around $53,000 a month.
Could you explain? In practical terms, we're talking about cash and money we owe. Where does the money that is represented by that $40,000 of depreciation in a month, where is that?
So you'll see that in the P&L at the bottom line. So you'll have a net operating income on the financials, and then down below they need to deduct the depreciation monthly or on a.
Yeah, where is the money? I mean, you get this much money in, $100 in,
yeah,
and you spend $60, mm-hmm, and then you allocate $40 to depreciation. But right, where is that $40 since $100 came in? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yep. So the depreciation, that the $40 that you're talking about, that is the total capital assets. Let's say if we had a $10 million in assets, then the value of those assets depreciate over time.
Mm-hmm.
They do an allocation, it's an accounting function, and they do an allocation of that of those depreciated values,
mm-hmm,
and then they deduct that from the net operating income. And so that's why. So let's just say, our depreciation is a little over $50,000 a month. That's why if you make $40,000, you're going to show a net loss of X number of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, one of the things that, without getting too detailed, but one of the things that we did was we went through the whole fixed asset list. We used to have three different lists. We consolidated to one. That was the first the first effort in order to get our arms around what the...
To get a correction of that.
Correction. Yeah. Then they looked at it again. There were a lot of things that have been capitalized over many years mm-hmm. that didn't belong on the capital list according to state audit office standards or even GAAP standards and accepted accounting principles. So they have adjusted that. So we took an additional loss on paper.
It's a paper loss, but not in reality.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something you have to consider over the long term.
But it's a long term.
But in the short term.
That's right. That's why you see our cash reserves keep increasing.
Yeah.
That's why we keep building our savings.
Right.
Because we are contributing continually to our savings. So the money that we make, we're putting it into it. So almost 4 years ago in November, we were $831,000.
Yeah.
And this year, we'll end probably over $2.8 million. Yeah. So we will have saved $2 million over the past four years.
Yeah.
And that money goes towards savings to fund the capital requirements today and down the road years from now.
And in reality, those are those items that are depreciating in value that we are obligated to fix, essentially. Right. Yeah.
And I don't... Otter will disagree with me, you know, because she's, you know, finance and accounting. I don't pay as much attention to depreciation.
Yeah.
I want to know how profitable we are.
Yeah.
And are we being profitable enough and are we saving enough to fund our requirements years from now?
Yes. Right.
So the first big hit we will have is the marina replacement down the road. So we look at the life of every asset. Now we haven't determined the exact life of every asset, which we are going to do, right? So we'll have them inspected. Then we need to do an estimation of the replacement value in today's dollars. We do an estimated replacement value. That's the real hurdle of how much we need to figure out, you know, when we get to 10, 15 years down the road, when is the first big, you know, lump sum. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to build our income to fund it down the road, and then you look at all your funding sources, right? So we look at whether we get it through rates and fees, through our revenue and controlling expenses. We get it through grants, potentially. We get it through, there's different taxing authorities, but then you got to go issue a tax, whether it be a LID or, and some have constraints, so some can't be used for this.
Yeah.
But you get it or through an IDD or something along that line.
Yeah.
And then, or you may be able to get it through an appropriation at the legislative level.
Right.
More people for some of the really huge ticket items, like the breakwater, for example, which is everybody's finding is pretty much unfunded anymore. Mm-hmm. That was established by the federal government.
Yep.
They've abandoned those assets in effect. So if you go to the Army Corps and ask them to replace the breakwater, they're going to tell you no, and that we don't have any money, and it's not relevant anymore. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those marinas were created under Magnuson and Jackson, and they had appropriations, but now they've kind of said hands off. So other people figure out, well, how do we fund, like Bremerton, how do we fund the repair and replacement of that breakwater? They go through and get every grant they possibly can. They'll go to the Economic Development Authority for the area, potentially see if they can kick in money. And they, all these different funding sources, they try to assemble it until they pay for the replacement of the breakwater.
Yeah.
But, you know, like breakwater, on their assumption, I think what they came up with was like almost $10,000 per lineal foot. So what we did was we took... The marina is going to be the first main large asset that we're going to have to replace. But we have, you know, 10 to 15 years down the road. So what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to keep the marina as strong as possible through our really robust maintenance program.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to maintain that asset to push that out further. Then the other thing we're going to do is we're going to try to reduce the cost of the replacement. And so that will go into my staff report, but we've been looking at other alternatives for replacing the docks, but we have to build them to the current and future specification required by Army Corps, National Marine Fisheries Service, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the tribes.
And local fish and wildlife on top of that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Though they're pretty pretty easy.
They yeah,
pretty
yeah.
cool to work with, actually. Yeah. So, but and the Department of Ecology, everybody's kind of, every regulatory agency has got their thumb in that pie.
Yep.
So that's what, did I, is that, so the depreciation that we're talking about?
Yeah.
That answers the question, okay?
And so one comment that what you had to say made me think of is that the fact that we are designated a transportation hub for the whole region by the Puget Sound Regional Council could have some benefits when we get down to replacing some of the infrastructure required to provide those services.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah.
That's absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there
nobody's
could be
ever done that before.
A tangential benefit indirect to other operations just by accident, really, more than anything, because it would be funded specifically for the transport because we're transportation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's an advantage.
Yeah, and you understand that better than anybody.
So, moving on,
you see, operating income parking is about $327,809, which is approximately $84,000 ahead of budget year to date. Very difficult to know when the COVID was going to go away, but we can see obviously that their commuters are coming back, and that's pretty close to pre-COVID levels. Fuel sales are ahead of budget, partly because the cost of fuel has gone through the roof. $650,502 year to date. However, the cost of goods sold is also ahead of budget, $556,130, and that's resulting in a net profit for fuel sales of $94,372 year to date. So about $94,000. Operating expenses are below budget by about $87,000 year to date. $31,759 was reclassed to consulting fees, professional services from 2020 that were capitalized in error. Other income expenses. So in August, we completed a cleanup of our capital assets. This involved going through each asset and removing items that were below the $5,000 threshold. There were 142 assets removed from our asset. Asset list. Many of these assets were fully depreciated. However, those that were not resulted in a loss in asset disposal of $68,393. So we've just basically conducted a pretty thorough cleanup of all of our fixed assets at this point. And also we've adopted policies and standards that are consistent with the state audit office going forward for whether any asset that we acquire, for example, the spill kits or the spill prevention systems, are then capitalized. So they're pretty simple criteria to follow. Audra, you still there? If you have any comments or thoughts? Am I missing anything?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I only to say that I know Greg's been given this. For a while, and I do disagree with them on the depreciation, only because I'm the finance accounting side. But it is very normal for management, especially in this type of industry, to exclude the depreciation. It's an operating expense simply because it's us paying for those assets that are out there and working for us.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all about the replacement of those assets. But the good news is that, yes, we were able to clean a lot of things up. And once we determine the replacement timeline of some of those assets, we may have to decrease and match up basically so that they'll be fully depreciated by the time we have to replace those assets. Everything was put on for like 50 years at a time. So really you want to be conservative when you capitalize assets. So. Anyway, enough of the depreciation. It is what it is. Now we're in line. So that's all I got to say. Thanks.
Well, this is a managerial comment from me. This is what depreciation is at the book value. So if you bought that dock, and that dock was $5 million to build in 1967, replacement value is now going to be $10 to $15 million or whatever. at that in the future.
Right.
So you have to. So unfortunately, the depreciation understates the amount of money that you're going to have to save to replace that asset in the future.
Right. Right.
So it gives you a false sense of security. If you're using the depreciation value, I would say that we need to be making more to be able to pay for the future value. So how are we going to pay for that? Now, you could say we have future income coming in down the road through grants, which we've pursued, or other sources of income. But somehow you have to come up with that. Then you have to, you know, you have to weight that. What's the likelihood of getting that grant?
Yeah.
You know, is the county going to support us? Maybe with the Puget Sound Regional Council, what are the priorities?
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things create uncertainty. So I kind of like to count on what I can count on, and I prefer to be self-reliant as much as possible, which is, it's a higher bar and it's more difficult to achieve. That's it. Thank you.
Excellent. Where am I? Lost my place here. Okay, we are at our second public comment period. Any questions or thoughts, or you have any question? You guys have any questions of us, or kind of what we're doing? Just so you know, I think this might be a good time to just talk about where we are in the budget process and some of the analysis that is going on in relation to that. We'd like you all to be invited to our work sessions the next few Tuesdays. We meet every Tuesday at 8:30 in the morning. But for this month, we will. We've been alternating those meetings here recently, but because the budget development has a lot of items that we're very interested in as a commission, we've asked to have weekly meetings. So Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, we're meeting at the Village Green at 8:30. So we'd like you to invite you to attend, and we'll just be going over some of the basics with the budget, including the marine rate study and some components there too. So, let's see here. I think.
And we just went over it yesterday morning.
Yep.
So Rick and Mike Reed were in attendance, Rick Devlin and Mike Reed were in attendance, for example. And we presented the commission, which we can present to you. It's public information. We kind of talked about the historical mortgage rates, for example, and we had it kind of listed out as to what they were with a table. And then we had three different potential options, just as an example, from if we were to maintain what we're doing and trying to stay at average based on last year's average, and kind of meet last year's average for the rates, or if there was some additional adjustment, and then what some of the other ports were doing, you know, what that would mean if we, let's say like Edmonds or Anacortes or somebody else, if we were to adopt what they're doing, what that would mean. We haven't made any recommendations, it's more just a discussion. And to make sure that it's informed and that people could kind of see both graphically and with the table exactly where the rates have been and where they are. And then we submitted just kind of a draft if we were to adopt staying the course and just keeping that, trying to keep up with last year's average rate, then where that would put us at. And we put that, give that to them, and we can give this to you electronically. So if you want, we can send it out to you. And then we discussed, hey, what's happened with the wait list, what's happened with turnover in the marina. They wanted a detailed analysis of it. So what we did was we looked through all the slips and we quantified whether they were in the district or outside the district. And we have about 42.5% in the district and 57.45% outside the district of all the permanent mortgage. And then we looked at the turnover. And they wanted it by slip size, and so we have the turnover within the district by slip size, and the turnover outside the district by slip size, and then total turnover Total turnover is just under 4%, the 250-some slips. But it gives kind of a, I can't say I would take these numbers other than to say we have a pretty significant, I don't have the historical that the commissioners do, but we have a significant portion of in-district people that's grown over the years. Used to be as low as 20, maybe 25% or so. Mm-hmm. That seems to be strengthened. Last year it was 44%, I recall.
Yeah.
So we've had maybe a little tiny dip, should be one vote. There was another guy that's actually categorized as outside the district because he has a mailing list, but it's in the district. But
you use the term for the type of person. What, and I don't understand.
Oh, so the Port 1, the commissioners had asked, what's the composition of people that live in the Port District that are using our mortgage for permanent mortgage? And what percentage of people outside the district that are using the mortgage now? So we gave them a breakdown of that. Then they also want to know, well, what's the turnover, what's the change, and what is it comprised of? So we gave them a breakdown of that as well. And it's in a table, I can send that to you. And we had that yesterday. We handed it out, and then we just sent it around. But I'll send that to you.
The district boundary basically goes up to, you know where the Gliding Eagle gas station is? That road, Delaney Road, and then all the way back to Puget Sound. And then from there, closer to Gamble Place, and then not the Gamble Road portion that's, you know, where all the low bank waterfront is in Gamble Bay there. It's offset that just a little bit, and then all the way back to principally around Gamblewood, and then back up the hill where 104 takes the dive and goes to Port Gamble. So up the hill from there, and then it connects back this way. So it's a pretty good sized district.
Yeah, a map that we could put up here.
Okay, I'll send a map along with this information too.
Yeah, I think that'd be helpful to know where the, hey, you know, where folks live, you know.
We just took the code for Kingston.
It was interesting, though, that outside of the Port District, there's certainly a lot more boaters in our region that live in Indianola or, you know, just outside of the Port District. But we were very curious as a commission, hey, what's it comprised of, you know, the locals in the district.
So if you look, there's Hansville. Didn't you say, Mary, you looked at the list of everybody? You said
and the number of people that are from North Kitsap, as opposed to Seattle or Everett or Hawaii or whatever, is, I would say it's at least 75%, if not 80%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we are primarily serving this community, broader community.
Yeah.
So you said it goes up to Delaney?
Up to Little Boston, I think. I looked at the map. It looked like, I'm trying to remember the legal description.
Little Boston and Delaney, I think, is the road that goes to the right.
No, it doesn't go that far.
I'm north of there, but I have a Kingston zip code. It cuts off at 360.
Yeah, I think there are some Kingston people. Yeah.
Which is not in the Port District.
Eglon is a separate district.
Correct.
Yes, the same as
Eglon.
That's correct. Yeah, that would be. You're probably in the Port of Eglon district. Mm-hmm. I guess.
And they have three commissioners too.
Yeah, you can always look on your tax statement, and it'll say there'll be a Port District. There'll be, you know, public works, stormwater fees, and you know, the weed management and those kind of things.
We didn't go through, so that's why I said we used the zip code.
Yeah.
We didn't go through and actually plot every single resident for 255 perm to see if exactly, but we figured, well, if you have a Kingston zip code, that's a good chance you're very close to the Port District, if not in it. Okay. So, but when you look at the broader, when it says on all the lists of everybody, if you said Hansville or you include Eglon or you include anywhere they have another zip code, It's you know, probably 75% of all the people anyway, but I don't have an exact count on that. It's looking at the list, you can kind of tell. So there's just not that many people that are, you know, like Seattle or Edmonds or way out of, you know, it's predominantly by far away, it predominantly serves North Kitsap.
Mostly local.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
4 years ago, there was probably in the 30 percentile how many were actually in this area. But it's going up steadily. Yeah.
And we're having, you'll give you the actual numbers so you can see, but we had probably a total of 10 per mortgage slips that turned over out of the 252. That's how much turnover we had this year. I don't have a year over year. We didn't track every single thing, but we're trying to start tracking this stuff more closely and build that knowledge base so you can kind of see any trend or anything that would be an alarm. Now I just want to add one thing, just because there's a lot of things that go out there, but Port of Edmonds, so they try to differentiate between in-district and out-of-district on pricing or policies, and they were taken to court and they lost. It's not allowed to do that, but there is a differentiation when you say to someone, if you're talking about taxes, hey, am I supposed to be subsidizing potentially somebody outside the Port District? Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're being taxed and you're in the Port District, that's a personal decision if you have a problem with that or not, or if you feel like it's the old, but people probably should feel pretty good that it predominantly is supporting North Kitsap, at least in Medina.
Right. And just as a side note, so, and I said this yesterday when we were all together too, for currently, if you're living in our port district and you're paying the port taxes, a $300,000 home pays approximately $90 a year to the port for port taxes. That's an approximate, okay?
Well, it's really easy to think in terms of, I don't have a boat, I'm subsidizing the marina. But that's one of the reasons that we need to keep our eye on the whole community economic development and how we're serving the entire community. And we're aware of that, but when you get into the, I don't want to pay for the marina because I don't use it thing.
Yeah,
and I think that's really important, because sometimes people say, well, this goes to everything in the world. You could say, I don't have any direct benefit, why am I paying anything? But you have indirect benefit, which, ultimately lends towards the fabric of the community.
Yeah.
I pay for, interstates through my federal taxes, because I want trucking. I want to be able to provide trucking from Ohio out to here to manufacture the United States for materials we might need here. Mm-hmm. But there is that... that's just really a personal choice sometimes at some level, but I think there is the marina. You can't, it'd be hard for me to say that it doesn't really provide an awful lot of economic development that drives certainly a lot of energy within the Kingston area here. And we try to, we end up sourcing local a lot of times, especially now more so than ever. But it is a discussion to have. And then we talked a little bit about if you want me or any commissioner, anybody, I'll come and talk to the yacht club, is what we offered up. We talked to Rick and Mike yesterday, say, hey, why don't you guys just come and do a presentation, then you guys can ask any, the yacht club people can ask any questions, members can ask any questions they want. We did it before COVID, and then we stopped doing all sorts of stuff during COVID, but we probably should do that.
And I think each one of us, when we were elected, we came and gave a little talk at the yacht club. Mm. But nothing's happened since COVID.
That was great. That was a really good discussion. Thank you. I think we're down to it, aren't we? Oh, commissioner reports. Sorry.
I'll let you go first, Mary.
Well, I think the most interesting port-related thing that I wanted to comment on is the Ferries Conference, which is a regional annual conference that brings together a lot of discussion about what's happening with ferries, and really a focus this year on technology, the technology of running the boats. And it's coming.
Yeah.
The change. And one of the things I came away thinking is that it would probably be very helpful if the Port of Kingston, Kitsap Transit, and Washington State Ferries sat down and said, okay, we were all at this conference. where do we think we're going?
Right.
And what do you see as the challenges here? Depreciation could look pathetically unimportant when you start talking about changing fuel. You know? So yeah, that was my report.
Awesome. Yeah, the whole electrification is, I find that fascinating.
Huge. Oh, and they're talking hydrogen.
Oh my God, yeah, totally, yeah.
So I had the short straw, maybe I drew the short straw, I'm not sure. for the Kiwanis Coho Derby, I totally did not get to see any of the fish be weighed at all. I was up doing parking and making sure that people were able to get out of their spaces, and we had to move more than one trailer, pick it up and move it in order to get them safely out of their spaces.
Oh,
but it was worth it because everybody got out safe and sound, and we stacked them in there like fish in a barrel. We did really good, and I think that overall, for its first year, I think it went really well. I know there's a list of things that we need to improve on and things that we need to kind of figure out. But it was great. It was great. I got like 15,000 steps in that day. It was just, it was really off the charts. So, and I also attended the conference with Mary and Greg. And it was really fascinating, some of the things they were talking about, because they had a gentleman, I believe he was from Finland. Wasn't he from Finland? Yes. Mm-hmm. That gave a presentation about, I mean, they are quite a bit ahead of us in their using green energy of any sort, and also Norway is too.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about the use of, which they're already processing a lot of them, of using methanol, ammonia, hydrogen as fuels, not to mention electricity. There's many ports, there's many ships that are exclusively electric that, and some of them, as from my previous ferry conference, that are unmanned vessels, which I didn't even realize that are going across the waters now, that are totally unmanned and electrified vessels that are out there, and who knew? But the ferry system was talking about, they were talking about doing, they were got funding for new boats, electrified boats. And so I think there's going to be 5 within the next few years. They're kind of behind on their schedule because of shipyards and building and things like that. But I think by 2040, they wanted to be pretty well on board. They also talked about the docking in downtown Seattle that they're trying to do for the fast ferries and how much space they need. And right now there's 5 boats kind of juggling and coming in and docking for the different passenger-only fast ferries that are docking in downtown Seattle. So they need another place. And so they were talking about the different funding options and what they could do and partnerships that they could work with people in order to create other facilities in downtown Seattle that they could potentially have docking ability. So, but it was a really good, it was a good conference. Looking forward to our October conference up in Leavenworth that is our small ports conference later on in October. But that is my report.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to segue into the highlight of my month, which was attending the environment seminar. And that's something near and dear to my heart. And the focus this year was on climate action and climate action plans and things like that. Since ports and generally, and as a generalization, most ports have water dependent uses. We know that we have climate change that's on the way, and ports are, especially the larger ports, are really taking a focus on this to understand how it might impact, how sea level rise may impact their operations, but also in relation to climate change and how can we reduce pollutants, improve air quality, you know, and also eliminate or at least extremely reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So with that, some of the highlight for me was something that the Port of Grays Harbor is proposing, which is a true green generation for creating hydrogen and hydrogen fuel cells. So what they're going to do is they're going to use a large barge, 175-by-75-foot barge. They're going to use a wave generation methodology to create electricity by the wave action itself, which creates a kind of like a gyroscopic generator, right? So then that generator will create an electric current. Through the electric current, they're going to separate the elements of water, H2O, into hydrogen and oxygen. They're then going to concentrate this gas. They figured that this way, we're not relying on an electric grid from the power generation of even dams, you know, electricity from dams. So they wanted to do a true green experiment in relation to this, and the project is just going to be phenomenal if it pulls off. The wave action necessary was, I think, a 6-foot wave in general. So as the barge goes up and down, it'll generate the current needed to convert this. But Laura was saying, you know, about the ideas of new fuels, and hydrogen seems to be what everybody is really focusing on now. Just fascinating stuff. So, let's see, what else? There was also some things on comprehensive stormwater management that I found really interesting too, and cleanup of toxic sites. They did a skit on a cleanup of a toxic site that's in the port of Tacoma. That is a really just an absolutely fascinating skit that they put on. It was hilarious. I'm going to see if I can get a copy of it, and we'll put it on the website because it really was fun. That's all I have.
Staff reports.
So staff reports are next.
Pick one, Steve.
I guess I'll start.
Okay.
For the maintenance department, we have some staff training now that we're slowing down a little bit for this month. Next week will be once our first session, a HAZWOP refresher, which will be kind of welcoming because we have a couple of new folks. They're not new anymore as far as that goes, but this will be a great time for them to dive into our hazmat or awareness, so fuel dive, everything that goes along with it. Christmas prep and plan well underway. Ray's got a real good finger on the pulse for that. And as far as maintenance personnel, we're supporting and planning and kind of carving out our piece of the Christmas installations. I got projects scheduled really till the end of the year. We're more or less fully staffed right now. No major vacation scheduled. So we're on autopilot now, just working from the calendar. And then updating the capital plan. I think we have a final meeting about that next week. Greg and I and Mark Gordon have been talking about that. So that's it.
That's great. Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah.
I was wondering how the bird deterrent system was working. Now
it's working.
It's working this morning because I was watching them.
Yeah.
Fly off in clouds.
Ron Carsmore said they're all at his house
for a while.
Well, that's okay. Ron, he'll probably name them. He's got time on his hands. there's little maintenance to do. We've had to fix a few leaks. We've figured out a couple better options than what we started with, so we've had to do some tweaks.
Mm-hmm.
But cost-wise, it's, you know, I don't, since we installed it, we've maybe spent another $150-$200 on some upgraded hose and better hose clamps. There's always a better mousetrap out there, and there's, you know, the gear clamp style hose clamps. they really break things down quickly, so to a smooth post clamp, and it's yeah, we're tweaking a few things here and there. I'm a little concerned about winter. How we're gonna drain that, so we avoid freezing. But we'll figure it out. And if we have to, we'll drain it. You know, when we know it's gonna be cold, and so the sprinklers crack. They're not real durable, but they've held up well in the wind so far. November winds, I'm a little skeptical that they'll hold together, but we'll see.
Yeah.
They're plastic sprinklers. Really.
Yeah, so cool.
We'll maintain what we can. If we need to put a little wind shroud around them, they have a real heavy, wide base that we made out of whaler wood, so it's durable and heavy enough to support it. It's just a matter of what vibration issues will have.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I think it's a tern. They circumnavigate the system, and they're a menace.
Yeah.
My name is
right.
But I will win.
That's good. Steve, did you have something?
I was going to say, from a boat owner's standpoint, it's 100% better. It's absolutely, the problem seems solved completely.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And everybody I've talked to down there agrees that, and I believe that it's even kept some of the birds from coming underneath and landing on boats and doing whatever they do there.
Right. Oh,
so
good.
And we did actually put more hardware cloth under the wharf by the fuel dock, where the pigeons had found a couple holes in there, and they had a few nests, and we waited and made sure we didn't trap any in there, because that turned into a big mess years ago with the fairies. But we made sure they were all gone, and we fixed those holes. So I think the pigeons, and those were the ones that get under the structures a lot, and the pigeon problem's kind of gone away too now.
Yeah,
that was so nice of you to wait until they were all gone.
I worked for the, anyway. Most people don't see that side of the fairies.
Yeah.
But the little ones that run around, what are those that do in the rocks?
Oh, the snowy plovers.
Yeah, they had them up at the garden up by the sign the port maintains.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the babies, because I walked up there one time, and so I called down and talked to Ray, and so they kind of avoided that area for a little while until the little ones were out of the nests and running off by themselves.
Oh, were they killdeers?
Yeah, killdeers. They were killdeers, where the mom always fakes that she's
hurt. Oh, I'm injured.
Yeah, it was really nice of them to do that, too, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, good to hear. Thank you for the feedback.
Thank you. That's good. Who's next?
Chris, do you have anything?
I don't have anything.
Margaret?
You
there?
She's muted.
Good.
Oh, she doesn't have anything.
Yeah,
she
doesn't. Mind me.
So, the last quarter, we always have budget, comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements, the capital plan, basically, that we have to review. And then we have to go over the mortgage rates. We already, in August, were required to go over insurance, so, we re-up. It keeps increasing. It's just the insurance market is really, really, really bad. It's globally bad, and reinsurance is just brutal. I was at the various conferences. We were sitting next to a couple of people that they work in the maritime insurance, and they were talking. They were kind of lamenting. They sold their business to one of the large global firms, but they were lamenting, too. It's just problematic. So they said they're not even sure how to get around it exactly. But I think everything is going along pretty well. We did the Chamber of Commerce, I was reporting on the Chamber. The Chamber submitted an application and was successful in getting $85,000 out of the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee. Rob Gelder was on the review committee this year. I want to thank Commissioner Gelder on behalf of the Chamber Board and Kingston, because I think he was pretty appreciative of the proposal that Kylie Rose put together. So she's been promoted executive director.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the use of those funds?
So she, I got to look at the grant. She put together, it's kind of for our marketing, and she put together a grant application. I was actually more trying to fulfill the last grant application, because we have a kiosk that we were going to purchase. The vendor won't, basically honor the
price quote.
Oh.
And they more than doubled it. And so then it's like, okay, so now we have to go back and figure out what to do with that grant application. So they're going to try to source it. So I worked with the State Ferries actually on the last grant, which they were great. So they got us, you know, over here and said, I met with Leonard Smith, who's been here for like, I think he's worked for the ferries for 40, 50 years. He started off as a kid at the ticket counter over here. So he came through, and then we met at the ferries conference. I met with David Sowers, who's in charge of all the terminals. So he's managing, you know, $400 million projects, but he takes the emails and addresses it really quickly and said, we'll just make it happen. Same thing happened with the Derby. We wanted to have a drone and take some pictures of that. And Ray's not here. He can't be here today, but he has the Foulweather Bluff race going on this weekend, and so they're going to take pictures of that as well.
Oh, good. Right.
So I would say, you know, the State Ferries are really great to work with right now for us. Generally, we're communicating quite a bit. They have their, you know, they're having problems with staffing, obviously, and with mechanical issues. You know, they got major issues. Kitsap Transit, they're not really having staffing issues. I think they're trying to make sure that, I think now they can say they're having pretty good performance now mechanically from all the vessels, and I think they feel pretty confident. So they're going to undertake a marketing campaign about, hey, you know, come use the Fast Ferries out of Kingston, that we're going to have continuity of operations. So, you know, I think we'll see. I have high hopes. But I think, you know, working with Kitsap Transit, State Ferries, they've been really good in terms of the dialogue and the county. I think we're getting more and more of a dialogue with all of them.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we did, so we went up and looked at Porto Friday Harbor. We looked at how they've been building their own dock sections. And they basically got quotes for the docks, and the quote and the estimates were just so high that it was just not tenable for them. So their executive director, he's actually came out of West Point. He's an engineer, and he worked for the Army Corps, I think, at one time, and also worked for Bonneville Power. So they came up with their own design, and they've been manufacturing their own dock sections. And it looked like it was going to be pretty reasonable. The cost of the materials keep varying so much, which has been a problem. So they, because of the problem with permitting, and it just seems like continual cost escalations, you can go kind of one of two ways. You can either try to go towards a really durable product that is going to last 30 to 50 years minimum, and then also you want to have it so it has a reasonable service, you know, it's easy to service.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go with something that's going to be a lower cost, and it's just going to be controlled obsolescence, you know, and you're going to have to replace it. The problem with that is that they're so restrictive on maintaining these assets now at the federal level, and getting your permitting in place. We're at a really weird juncture,
yeah.
And it's very difficult from being subject to the regulatory environment that we're in right now.
Yeah.
I'd rather go, if we can, towards a really durable product that people won't have to mess with for years ongoing, except for just like really simple repair and maintenance of them. So we went up and toured, looked at those facilities. We brought, you know, Mark Horton and Tori went up and looked at it. I think they were extremely impressed. They had, you know, they didn't use CAD, they used another software, but they had really designed these things pretty thoroughly. Then we had to go out in the field, actually look at them. Then we walked through all their manufacturing and how they did it. So they use HDPE for flotation, and they're using lumber for the most part for the framework, but it's mostly out of water treated lumber.
Right.
Anyway, the overall product, I think, looked really pretty good. Now it's a matter of, you know, once we come up with a standardized specification, then we can have it just manufactured when times are slow and hopefully really cut our costs.
Mm-hmm.
We would do that. So we did sign the interlocal agreement between us and Porto Friday Harbor.
Yep.
Now the proof is in the pudding when they give us an actual cost estimate as to, you know, how low can they go in effect. But I have a lot of high hopes, and they've already gone through a really brutal learning curve of mixing different materials as it heats and expands. You have wood versus HDPE,
mm-hmm.
Which is high-tensile polyethylene. It's this black plastic. So we'll just see. But they also find that they service it themselves very easily, and they kind of drop the utilities down and pull them up. I think it could be kind of customizable to be able to do some really good things.
Mm-hmm.
We had a really good discussion, as we just we talked about yesterday, I think, and even the previous week, with you know, some Rick and Mike and some people from the community. And they said, you know, they brought up some ideas about, well, what would we want to see for improvements at the in the marina and for the port. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll take some of those, we'll kind of collate all and see how easy or difficult it is to do some of these things. And then we'll come up with a plan and lay that out for the next year, 2, 3, 5 year plan in terms of implementation.
Great.
Just kind of like with the burden of turns for other things. So if there's things that are should be prioritized that people want to see, then good to know. I think, you know, you have a laundry list. So I think you've seen assessments done at marinas.
Yeah.
They give you a laundry list of every possible thing.
Yeah.
Then you just have to go through it and say, okay, well, what things can we... and then you have to have localized, you know, knowledge about, you know,
right,
what's working or not working.
Right.
But I'd say, you know, our guest forage has done really, really well. We expect it to continue on through this year. We've doubled our guest forage revenue in the past few years. And the parking forage, which our parking revenue went way down, like went to zero, I mean, just collapsed after COVID. We see that now has been rebuilding. So that's really good. And then we got to look at what we're going to do with our assets to try to bring them into use. So yep. Assets that are sitting idle, what can we do to bring them into use and also revenue generation in order to support them?
Yep, yep.
And so that's kind of where we're at.
Do you want to say a little bit about the architectural firm that we've hired?
Yeah, so we hired, so we are also looking at, so we know, we built a cash flow model overall for the port. So we know that we have to probably grow our way out of to be able to sustain the port financially over many years. We know that we can't grant our way out of it, we can't tax our way out of it, you have some combination of things, we do need to have to somehow grow. So what we looked at was, also it seems like that's the direction from the interviews that you guys conducted with many members of the public,
mm-hmm.
That to see commercial development. We also get a lot of feedback from all of our customers that they want to see more services and amenities, including, you know, restaurants or other services that attract boaters here.
Mm-hmm.
And the marina is a big part of our overall business, right? It's a third of our revenue.
Yeah.
So we looked at commercial development. So we went out for and interviewed a number of different architectural firms, and we hired Winslow Architects. They're on Bainbridge. And Charlie Winslow works with Sean Parker, they kind of their partner firms.
Yep.
And so they have they've come up, and they are going to be putting out a we'll actually start making some of this stuff more public. They're always a little bit, you guys see the information first, and then we get feedback about it, and then they start, you know, rolling it out. So we have basically kind of an overall, some concepts for what the site will look like, and they put forward. Now they're looking in superimposing that on aerials, as well as we also have the bathroom. So we've had them, hey, you guys, we need to have this. So we were going to do a pre-engineered, prefabricated, and just a purchase off of a state contract that turned out to not meet design standards, Kingston design standards. So we went a different direction where we'll do a design build. So that's in within the scope of their work. So mm-hmm. We're having them design the bathroom, and we'll build it in place. So that's where we're at right now. And then we'll be scheduling another meeting with them. They usually come on occasion to our work sessions to do presentation to talk about the Port Commission.
And we did receive a RCO grant to cover part of the cost of the bathrooms, the new bathrooms.
Yeah. So we have some guest moorage docks that we had. So we got three grants. We're a little over $900,000 a year ago. And we commingled our grant applications on two of the grants so that they covered both guest moorage expansion and the bathroom replacement. So then we thought we were just going to go through this, just put the like a typical bathroom that you see at the state level. They're pretty tough, and then you can customize them a little bit, but they don't meet the design standards, and we can't purchase that, you know, because they're $150,000 to $200,000. We can't just take a flyer on that, so we would have to, it's kind of chicken or the egg, as we ran into. So we just decided, hey, if we're going to do potential development, why don't we come up with a design that's going to be as functional as possible, and it'll come in around the same budget. And that also led us towards this, looking at the potential different designs for replacement of the docks. What can we do to improve those dock sections down the road? So that's why we looked at different designs, to hopefully go towards something that people will standardize to, because so many things are so customized, and mm-hmm. It's really expensive to get a customized engineered product versus have a standardized spec. So that's why we're working with Pride. We started looking around at all the different designs around the area. We originally came up, we looked at a design with the Pacific Netting Products, for example, had, which was supposed to be a 50-year plus yep. concept. Because really, what we're seeing now is that it's going to be so problematic to replace anything that you better do it right the first time. Because just going back and even doing maintenance, they want us to permit every little thing.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. And also now we're seeing with coming out of COVID, we're getting many more regulatory agencies are coming to visit us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually, a lot of them, now they're new people.
Yeah.
Kind of been the theme.
All three of them.
And so you're coming up with a whole different, have to start from scratch and kind of like, mm-hmm. okay, let's talk about what our program is here. And some stuff which has been grandfathered in, we got to figure that one out. It's not necessarily grandfathered in. So we got to navigate that. So far, so good, but.
Thank you, Greg.
Great, awesome. That's excellent. Okay, well, I think we're moving on now to getting close to adjournment.
Lynn.
Yeah, yes.
I have one question. When was the restaurant that was originally there taken down? Just curious.
None of us were part of the port at that point, so I really don't know. None of us were here at the port doing what we're doing now.
I heard what I essentially heard.
It burned.
What?
No,
well,
that was
the, no, that was the other one. But
actually, this one over here, didn't it
this
burn
one,
too?
I think that the owner retired, uh-huh. and no one else. I think they tried to find somebody to take it on, but
it was a very old building though,
yeah.
because for people that have been in Kingston forever. The Kingston Inn used to be on this side of the street,
yeah.
and then it moved over to that side of the street.
Yeah.
And so that originally was the Kingston Inn over here with the laundromat underneath,
right.
and at one time it had a bar underneath.
And the Ore House below with live music and the restaurant above. And then
yeah.
The maintenance area down there.
But it was pretty, it was a really old building too, because I know that, because I used to work in the laundromat down there as a teenager. And there was these back set of stairs that you could kind of go up, and they were the rickety set of stairs you have ever seen in your life. So, I mean, and that was back in the 70s. So, you know, I'm sure that the building probably got to a point where either somebody was going to have to do something with it because it did not meet, you know, code, I'm sure, at that time.
Yeah,
I'm just curious,
yeah.
Is it so much easier to redo something?
Oh, yeah.
For a new place?
Oh, clearly, yeah.
I don't really know, to tell you the truth.
It was when my wife and I first moved here in 98, it was there. We actually signed our real estate papers there. And
the restaurant.
Yeah, in Dickinson's. And then it wasn't but, 2 years after that it was demolished, I think. So maybe around 2000, I think, the year 2000, which seems to be like yesterday to me.
Well,
you know.
No idea, though.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Do you know, Mary?
Well, what I understood from the commissioners at the time was that there was controversy about the structure of the rental agreement. The upper restaurant, as I heard it, was paying part of its income to the port for rent. And then they built the sports bar downstairs, which they said, nope, that's ours. And so there was controversy. Mm-hmm. And at some point...
They didn't renew the lease.
They didn't renew the lease. And Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
That was a long time ago.
No doubt.
But the thing, this is, it's gone through, I think, you know, this is the third iteration of trying to, you know, look at development of this area. So, you know, it's a tough environment right now because so many things are unpredictable. I think it's, but I think you got to get it in place so that you can execute if the conditions and you attract an anchor tenant or two, that you then you actually execute on it. And I think the overall recommendation I've always said is I'd rather pre-lease so that you have cash flow to go against it before you're not going to just spec build it. I think that's too much of a risk for the board to do, really and truly. We just don't have the wherewithal to kind of do something like that. But I think that it would be really important to the community if we did something and do something and move forward for commercial development and attract people here. I think it would also really attract more business here and just customers overall. I think it would give some energy into the area. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, you know, we haven't heard about the commercial development in the area. I hear residential development, but I don't hear any commercial development. And that's, I guess, what we want to talk to a little bit about. How do we do that? How do you promote that at the county level, too?
We have empty storefronts already.
There are. Pardon? There certainly are empty. Lots of empty storefronts. Yep. Yeah.
But the landowners are sitting here, though, and they go, well, what happens if I sell the property? What do I got to do with that money? Where am I going to invest it? Right? And it's appreciating at 10 to 20% or 25% a year. So I'm making good money on it. You know, really, I know I'm making. It's just like a kind of forced savings. So a lot of them, even when I came here and I reached out, none of them were interested really in selling unless they cut a fat hog, you know. And then the parcels are really dinky. They're really small.
Yeah, that's so part of the problem.
You need to do an assemblage to almost do anything, except for those. There's a handful of those properties, and that's what people that own them are mm-hmm. thinking about, but they're mainly looking at residential and they could pay.
Yeah, good point. Yep. Anything else for the good of the order for anyone? No? Okay.
I just want to ask where the Wednesday, October 26th meeting is going to be held.
It's going to be here, right?
I'm not certain of the next regular session that's on my agenda to check and see where
it's. So, question mark.
Yeah. Yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes.
It'll be an evening meeting.
Yeah.
6:30.
So you guys know we alternate meetings from 1 o'clock to 6:30 month to month. So next month it will be October 26th. At 6:30 p.m. And then you can also join by Zoom too. So with that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Very good. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We are adjourned. It is.